My name is Jörg Heiser. I'm the co-editor of Freed Magazine. And we will talk a bit about shows that Roger Bürgel has done over the last years, together with his partner and co-curator Ruth Noack, who's also here today. And we will also talk a bit about the history of Documenta and the future of Documenta, and I guess that also implies the future of exhibitions, which is a big claim. But I think over the course of this conversation, maybe some of a little bit or a fragment of that claim can hopefully be talked about. And of course, at one point I will open up the discussion for you to join in and ask questions. Let me just give you a brief kind of introduction of Roger M. Bürgel. Born in Berlin, lives in Vienna since 1983, where he studied artistic practice, and until 87, right? And during that time also studied philosophy and economy at the university in Vienna, and was the private secretary or private assistant of Viennese actionist Hermann Nietzsche. And I think since around that time has also been continuing the theoretical and philosophical work, and as a writer and critic. And over the last like 6 years or so has been continually doing idea-driven group shows, starting with Revisions of Abstract Expressionism in 1999, and then an exhibition in 2000 called Things We Don't Understand at the Generali Foundation in Vienna, at a time when Vienna was in, or Austria was in turmoil over the joining of a right-wing party into government, government being the next important notion and issue that he has addressed since 2000 continually in several projects, starting with governmentality in 2000. We will talk about the notion of government that underlies this later on. And the show The Government, which has been traveling several venues in Europe and the US over the course of the last 2 years. But he has also been being assigned to direct the next Documenta, has been involved in looking back at the history of Documenta itself. Documenta has its kind of 50th year this year, because the first one was in 1955, and there was actually a series of an exhibition in Kassel at the moment, and a series of publications in concurrence with that. And you published a piece in the Frankfurt Allgemeine Zeitung about the first Documenta curated by Arnold Bode in 1955 in Kassel. And I'd like to start with that, and because I found it quite interesting that you looked so closely and so kind of very precisely on the way work was displayed there and what that meant in relation to that historic moment in West Germany. Maybe you could give us an idea of what your interest was at that point now to look at the history of Documenta.
I'm a romantic and therefore interested in origins. And when I got the assignment to do Documenta, I was of course interested in how it started, how it all began, and why it has become such an incredible success. I mean, that was and still is quite a mystery to me. And when I started to look at the exhibition and going through the archive, I realized that this was actually more than an exhibition of contemporary art. It was also an act to fund something like a public space. So it coincided somehow with the situation in Germany. I mean, after the Nazi period, it corresponded with the notion of a completely fragmented and traumatized German public, whose education project, Enlightenment, was totally bankrupt. And I was quite fascinated that it seems possible, at least in retrospect, I mean in 55 I was not alive, that it was possible to get people together or to make them share a common space in which they could start to relate to each other again. And this made me think, I mean, about an age-old question, about the relation between ethics and aesthetics. And this is a question which still concerns us, I think.
The actual installment in Kassel, you've described it in quite minute detail. Maybe we could show that one image that you have brought along. You talked a lot about the way the work was installed there within the ruin of the Fridericianum Museum, mm-hmm. which was a result of the bombardment during the Second World War, and how at the same time also the documenta was part of a flower garden show, which was the Bundesgartenschau, mm-hmm. which was taking place at the same time. And you also put that into the perspective of what you just described, this kind of idea that there was suddenly an aesthetic experience that was kind of like opening up the potential of people communicating again in a kind of fruitful way. Can you describe how precisely you think the display of the work or the work itself helped to trigger that or
I mean, the whole thing was, I mean, it was so incredibly subtle, and that was probably the reason why it became successful. I mean, the Bundesgartenschau attracted around 3 million visitors, so there were already many people in Kassel in the summer of 1955, and Documenta was nothing more than a supplement to the Bundesgartenschau. Because the Bundesgartenschau was also deeply involved, I mean, in this kind of working through Nazi trauma, because it showed a city which was destroyed, I mean, even worse than Dresden, due to its armament industry in the Third Reich, but it started much earlier. And I mean, it was a city driven by the Industrial Revolution and the Romantic movement as well, and this whole dialectic of modernity and violence, which is so important. I mean, for German history, can brilliantly be illustrated by the example of Kassel. The show took place. I mean, it was the idea of Arnold Bode, but Bode was also part, I mean, of this Federal Garden Show thing in the Museum Fridericianum, which was inaugurated around 10 years before the French Revolution as a Museum of Enlightenment. And this Museum of Enlightenment was in ruins, I mean, after the Second World War. So this was already a very stark symbol. What fascinated me about the exhibition is that it corresponded with Entartete Kunst. It was an attempt somehow to redeem Germany's failure to live up to its civilatory imperatives. But on the other hand, it was not an attempt to show contemporary art in the 50s, but it had a genealogical element. So Bode and Haftmann, that's the art historian, I mean, who helped Bode to think it up. What they wanted to show was not the state of the art, but how or from what forces contemporary art derives its particular shape. I mean, that was a basic idea. And they were showing these or tracing these genealogies in this ruin, which was it was a little bit restored, but it was not covered. So I mean, all the ruptures were visible, and they were using a kind of architecture where I have. Give you one example with the Quirico paintings here, which was the architecture of the time, the architecture of the Wiederaufbau, Germany in the 50s. I mean, all those kind of very provisional architectural elements. And what was so interesting is that the mise-en-scène of the art had, in a way, the same central value as the architecture or the environment. So the curatorial concept was, and I say this in retrospect, I mean, it was not Bode's program, was a kind of equalization in value between art, audience, and its architectural environment. So what Bode did, I mean, with this kind of mise-en-scène was that he created a kind of flow, a central flow where things could correspond with other things, where people could correspond with artworks. I mean, here you have this anthropomorph presentation, I mean, of paintings who were not hung on a wall, but were approaching, I mean, the visitor more or less on the same level where the visitor was moving. I mean, they are like kind of robots, I mean, crossing through space. And so the argument was, in fact, that all those notions of identity which had been so harmful, I mean, in the 30s, were kind of suspended in order to create a kind of central flow where new kinds of relation or a new imaginary of the relational became feasible. And in the end you had a space, an exhibition space, and that's why I'm talking of the exhibition as a medium in this respect, where people could psychically or on a psychic level relate to each other. And that was the most important element, I think.
At the same time, I'm trying to think of the actual people who were the art audience in the mid-50s in Germany. And, I mean, of course, there must have been, I mean, there was a continuation of, obviously, of, you know, people in politics and cultural politics and also in culture in the cultural world from the Nazi period. So it wasn't just different people, but it was the same people. And there was, at the same time, in the 50s, there was this kind of like very strong neglect and amnesia about what had happened just 10 to 15 years before. So are you really sure that this effect that you describe, which makes a lot of sense in the way you describe it, did actually engender what you describe in the factual people who attended Documenta in 1955? Are there reactions, critical reactions, or kind of like documents about audience reactions that kind of would support this kind of this view onto the potential of an audience envisioning a new kind of cultural and ethical space?
Kassel is also the city of the Brothers Grimm. So you can take it as a curatorial fairy tale, what I was telling. I think it has some... it might be true, what I'm telling, but for me it was more a kind of enabling myth to think of Documenta now. I mean, I've spoken, of course, with many people from who've seen the exhibition, and they basically agree. Also, as a documentary director, you never know if people tell you the truth. But but I think this element of a new beginning, which was not a regressive beginning or a complete repression, I mean, of what of what happened, but an awareness, I mean, of a state crime. I think this was there. I mean, because you had a really different configuration, I mean, of the human subject in this art, and I think that the art in itself strongly corresponded, I mean, to the apocalypse of the 30s and 40s. So to answer your question briefly, I don't know. But for me, it's interesting to think about it in this way.
One of the themes that you've conceived for three publications that are being published, I think, in the run-up to Documenta in 2007, for which you invite magazines, local magazines, art magazines, and other publications from all over the world to contribute to. The first one, I think, of those has the kind of theme of modernism is our classical period, is our the antique of today. Could you expand a bit on this notion of modernism? Because, I mean,
it's not modernism, it's modernity.
Modernity.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, and it's a question, basically. It's a question. I mean, is modernity our antiquity and the only antiquity we have? And this is, I mean, this is a question which has a strong appeal, and that's one of the reasons, I mean, why we chose it to artists and audiences alike, because for Documenta, which is supposedly a planetary scale exhibition, I don't know if it's possible, but at least you have to keep this image of grandeur. It's important that you have issues or subjects to which people can relate somehow. I mean, of course, modernity in Lebanon means something else than modernity in Barcelona or in the U.S. and so on and so forth, or in Brazil. But this is a subject we chose because we have realized, I mean, that many, many artists are dealing with the question or with the heritage of modernity. I mean, many artists who supposedly don't accept the notion that we are living in the postmodern era, but that maybe we haven't understood modernity properly. And so I think what's interesting about modernity is on the one hand that you have this notion of some of something like a planetary community of humankind, planetary scale, which modernity conceived in kinds of given terms. I mean, using norms, standards, and so on and so forth to think about it, and this is something which I think is important. I mean, to keep the notion of humankind, planetary scale, but not as something which is given, as in classical modernity, but as something we have to approach to. I mean, as one society, so to speak.
So basically, modernity as a kind of, for better or worse, common ground of art production today is something that we inevitably have to deal with once it comes to think about the genealogy of art production today.
Yeah, but also in terms of values, for example, and in terms of rights. I think it's... and also, I mean, there is... there is, as I already mentioned, this dialectic between modernity or processes of modernization and violence. And this is a dialectic we haven't properly understood, I think. And if we don't understand modernity, which is on the one hand shattered after the totalitarian catastrophes of the 20th centuries, but is still exercising its influence over us, then I think we are deemed to run in circles. And I think that we have to come up, and an exhibition is a wonderful venue to do that, I mean an art exhibition, we have to come up with a kind of planetary vision of how we want to live in 50 years.
So is that also basically a method or a strategy to undercut the assumption on the part of the audience, or maybe even on the part of the curators, that artists coming from all over the world are in a way kind of like ambassadors of their respective region or geographies, and rather come together driven by a particular idea that they might share or discuss and have very different perspectives on, but not necessarily in terms of their identity or geographical identity. Is that something that you imply in that approach?
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's one of the more regressive elements of contemporary exhibition making. I mean, that you invite people from all over the place, from Africa or Israel or Europe or whatever, but they are supposed, I mean, to represent their geopolitical identity.
Do you think also, for example, of the show that Katrin David did about the Arabic countries or art production from Arabic countries?
Yeah, but that's a different kind of show, because this show is rather a kind of archaeology. I mean, in order to arrive at a certain notion and thereby to deconstruct a given notion of what the Arabic space means nowadays. So this is different. But what we have are kind of McDonald's version of what Africa is or what India is and what Europe is and Latin America and so on and so forth. And you have a couple of artists who are ready to impersonate, I mean, those kinds of masks. But this is something which I find not particularly appealing.
But how do you, I mean, for example, to come back to that example of Katrin David's show, I can understand what you say in terms of her, to a certain extent, deconstructing these kind of assumptions or identities being ascribed. At the same time, I think there's a level where it inevitably has that effect. That's the way the show is labeled, that's the way it, for example, reappeared in the Biennale in Venice, and that's the way it inevitably puts basically the artists who are shown in a way in a pigeonhole in a perspective where they're first of all seen by the fact that they're coming from that particular place, rather than using particular artistic methods or using a particular approach to cultural production today. So how do you envision that for Documenta and Kassel? How do you avoid that effect? For example, using local magazines from all over the world to contribute to that is in a way means to delegate to a certain extent the cultural production that would bring all these things together and kind of lets them sit side by side. And I wonder how much that really creates a communication rather than just a kind of addition of things.
Yeah, I mean, those are very delicate processes. the thing is, and this has to do, I mean, with the question of local identities, that as a curator, I mean, even if you work on a team, what you need is kind of local knowledge. And so you have to deal, or you have to find people who are able to tell you, I mean, what's going on a certain spot on the planet, but who are also capable to relate it to what's going on global scale. And the local museum would be potentially a perfect place to do that. But there are magazines as well who are capable to do that and to provide you not only with information, but to enter into a kind of dialogue on exactly those questions, like is modernity our antiquity, and those other three subjects we have, bare life and education. And the next step, I mean, is to have those agents and create a space where they start to interact with each other. That's why it's not an addition, but what we have is a pool where the contributors of the different venues start to enter into a kind of dialogue. And it's something they are interested in anyway. I mean, Documenta as an exhibition is only capable, and that's fine with me, to sustain or to carry along a discussion which is already happened or in want of happening. I mean, sometimes it doesn't work because people simply have not the capabilities, I mean, the financial capabilities to do so. And this will also help us, I think, to get going a kind of sustainable discussion even after Documenta, because then this network is established. But it's not about delegation, it's more about inhabiting a hybrid workspace to work through, I mean, those particular subjects.
But I wonder how much the artists and the theoreticians and writers who have already been involved in the project you have been doing over the last couple of years inevitably form a kind of core group of that network, and how much that inevitably also implies a certain hierarchy of like who's close to you, both on a social level, also on the level of a shared cultural experience, and others who then kind of like are invited in to join in for that, but at the same time might feel that there is a kind of a longer distance for them to communicate with you. Not in a geographical sense, but more in the kind of implied sense of your curatorial approach. I wonder how you deal with that.
Yeah, I mean, the curatorial has nothing to do with democracy. And this is a curated process. I mean, and everyone is aware of that. I mean, who is entering from the side of the editorial boards. I have to say that I am personally not responsible, I mean, for this magazine thing. So this is already delegated. And it's under the control of Georg Schellhammer.
The editor of Springerin magazine.
Springerin, Hefte für Gegenwartskunst. But I mean, this whole process is a constant negotiation, and all those agents, I mean, they are pretty precise, I mean, about their demands and what they want from Documenta. And I mean, for me, it's quite normal, I mean, that we have this, also those kinds of fights about visibility, I mean, going on in a composition. I mean, that's rather normal.
Which brings us to the notion of governmentality, maybe, and the way it kind of reflects also in the curatorial and artistic practice. So could you give us a brief idea of how you conceive that notion that, I guess, comes originally from Foucault, and how you have kind of used this notion to create a thematic show? Maybe some images also available.
Oh yeah, I can show a few images, but that wouldn't help me to circumvent the answer. we started to think about government in Austria in 2000. I mean, after this switch in government, which was in fact a continuation of a steady decline of political culture, and I mean, I think speaking now, I mean, I would highlight some elements which still seem important to me. One is to think of subjectivity and the state as intertwined. not buying, I mean, the notion that those are two forces which somehow oppose each other, but they are linked. And and the second element which is important is that that power is exercised over people's freedom. I mean that that your personal freedom to move, to act in a certain way enables power to reproduce itself and to become much more to become much more precise and much closer, I mean, to the single individual and therefore much more representative of society as a whole. I mean, Foucault defined or tried to define government in terms of action. I mean, not longer in anthropomorphic terms, but in terms of action that acts upon other action, upon the action of others. So if a policeman beats you on your head, this is not government in the Foucauldian sense. But if the police somehow blocks streets in order to direct the flow of demonstrators away from the scene, then this is government. So it's about not about an immediate or direct use of power, but about mediated use of power.
Governing, controlling spaces and social environments.
And yeah, it's more about directing than controlling, and but of course, I mean they are also intertwined, and we realized that art is extremely good at giving the outlook of how this kind of mediated use of power, which involves temporalization or spatialization of acts, works. And so we started again with a core group of artists and artistic works which helped us to visualize or to contemplate relationalities of power. And one of the early examples is stems in fact from the 14th century. It's a painting by Ambrogio Lorenzetti, and it's a fresco in the Palazzo Pubblico in Siena, and this is it's an allegory of good and bad government. And what you can see is that here government in the form of this court is given from justice and runs through the whole social body. I mean, you have the citizens, and then is handed over, so to speak, to to the administrative council. I mean, to those people you would normally associate with government. I mean, the Bushs and Putins and Blairs of that world. And that was also for us interesting, I mean, to see that this notion of government in terms of action is not new or is not particularly contemporary, but is already part of the Western rationale of power. And this notion, I mean, of how government shapes communities, for example, is then taken up. I mean, this government picture traveled with us. I mean, it was shown at every venue. I mean, reproductions, of course. But then you have a version like this one, for example, another group portrait, this time from a photograph by Litvin van den Veen. And it shows a group of Moroccan youth who have been banned from an official demonstration against the Iraq war, because those Moroccan youth plan to burn U.S. flags, I mean, during the demonstration. And here you have a group which is not whole together, but subtly fragmented, isolated, I mean, from the flow of the argument, so to speak. And that was more or less our way to proceed, I mean, by creating visual analogies, I mean, to get a notion, I mean, how power actually works. This was presented at the Witte de Witt venue in Rotterdam. So it had for you it looks strange, but it had a local element, and people could detect that those youths were actually standing on the steps of the City Hall of Amsterdam.
I've seen parts of the exhibition in Vienna in the Secession, and there were works, for example, by the painter Dirk Schmidt, who painted a German TV talk show, which usually on Sunday nights kind of gives the kind of briefing for the political media discussion, with like big politicians being present, and there was another work, for example, by Peter Friedel, which showed which shows children playgrounds, and I can very much see how both of these works can be conceived or seen in a show in terms of the way they address these questions of the way, for example, public opinion is directed or governed, or the way children's behavior is directed or governed. At the same time, I'm wondering whether there isn't maybe the danger of kind of leveling out the specificities of these very different contexts when you put them under the kind of the same perspective of like government or governing, or the way subjects relate to the state. Also thinking of the way other factors like economy or supranational factors come into play, and that's the kind of more kind of content level of my slight problem with that. And the other level of that is that the way you work with display also, to a certain extent, I think, basically turns work into props of that thematic approach, that there is a way where, for example, it reminded me, the way it was installed in the Secession, of the show that Joseph Kosuth did at the Brooklyn Museum, where he used parts of the collection and kind of and took it into the display situation and kind of in that way used the work on a kind of meta level. And that was a very interesting show, and I think I'm not saying that this is not possible or you shouldn't do that when as a curator. At the same time, I think you're working not with parts of a collection, but you're working with artists who produce work particularly for that exhibition. So what kind of tensions does that create, and how do you legitimize also towards the artist this kind of absorption to a certain extent even?
Yeah, I depend on very strong and sovereign artists. That's true. And I mean, who are willing to engage in a kind of collective composition. The shows we did were conceived with artists, and the works are not props because the argument actually is derived from them. So it's not that I have a particular theory or that Ruth and I have a particular theory in mind, whereby theory means looking anyway. But so it's not about illustrating a certain mindset, but it's an attempt to highlight or to illuminate certain characteristics or specificities and bring them out. And I'm ready to do that, I mean, if the artists agree, for a month or two. and then, I mean, the pieces are free again to enter into other contexts. if there is a wish to do that. But I'm an art lover too, and so my interest is always to make a piece shine in the context of an exhibition, where it enters into correspondences with other pieces, but where it also shines in its particularity. But you have to trust me on that, because I can only prove this in the space of the exhibition itself.
I think this is the point now, maybe to open up the discussion to the audience. Please be reminded there's unfortunately only one microphone for the audience, so please let me know when you have a question, and we will get the microphone straight to you. The shock of the moment, don't hesitate. Oh, there's a question in the back there.
Hi, and thank you very much for the talk. I just wanted to ask you, could you elaborate on this vision of making a piece shine in its own particular light as well as in the community of other pieces? How can that be actually put into practice?
I think that's the discipline, I mean, of curatorial work. But let me see if I have an example for you. I start with this one. I mean, this is the government installation in Barcelona, where we opted to work outside of the museum Magba, and although the show was commissioned by Magba, and instead in other venues on the periphery of Barcelona. This was the gym of a school building, and for the composition of the whole, I mean, we have here in this show different elements. I mean, some dealing with local specificities, with local struggles. We even had in the show a 20-year-old photographic collection of children's photographs who were documenting at that time in the 80s, I mean, the changes, the urban changes in the gentrified periphery of Barcelona. But we had also documentary photographs by Patrick Feigenbaum, who was working with a geographer from Barcelona, who was telling him to document certain spots which are paradigmatic, I mean, for those changes, for this kind of gentrification. But we also have other works. I mean, like, for example, on this Japanese screen, a piece by Alejandra Riera that dealt with border trafficking in Argentina, and on the border between Argentina and Bolivia. So I cannot give you the content of all those works in a nutshell. I could only say that they all dealt with the notion of borders, but that you have a new kind of border now which became important for the exhibition. Not longer the border between one country and the next, or between the city and its outside, but you have those kind of internal borders which keep meandering and wandering, I mean, within communities. And with this kind of display, You could formally relate, I mean, the one border piece dealing with Barcelona to the other border piece dealing with Argentina and Bolivia. And so this is a kind of context in which your vision, I mean, as an audience, could easily flow from one piece to the next. But on the other hand, I think the presentation highlighted each piece in its specificity. I mean, you have on the one hand those Feigenbaum photographs hang on the wall quite classically, like Poussin paintings, because he's also dealing, I mean, with this notion of pictorial classicism. Then in the vitrines, I mean, you have the pieces of the children, and then here in this on the screen, which is also like a kind of border separating the spaces, but also creating a relation, I mean, between the one wall and the other, the Riera piece, which also goes around the screen. So you have the beginning of a sequence on this side and the continuation of the flow on the other side. So as an individual moving through the space, you are constantly invited to keep walking and watching.
This may be a stupid question, but why did you photograph it tilted?
Yeah, because I'm a modernist. No,
in or order Russian, to Russian constructivism, isn't it? Yeah. Like diagonal.
Well, you learned your lesson, so you can skip Documenta. But I photographed it that way in order to highlight this the ways of sequencing images, light. Everything, you have the correspondence between the windows and the light on the floor, for example, just in order to highlight the formal qualities an exhibition should have.
There's a question here. Microphone, please.
Thank you. I want to ask a question about, you mentioned ethics and aesthetics. At the beginning of your talk, and you've talked about the kind of working through of trauma in the history of Documenta. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered, Ockwi Enwezor, I've heard him say quite a few times here in London that the end and the aim of Documentary 11, through the kind of inversions of the discursive over the visual and the periphery over the centre and so on, the end and the aim was to reconfigure the epistemological foundation of the condition of art. And I just wonder, because you've already mentioned the kind of history of Documenta in relation to Germany's history, but also ethics and aesthetics, if there was an end and an aim beyond this question of modernity as antiquity, what would it be in relation to this question of ethics?
Yeah, of course, there is an end and an aim. I mean, the end and the aim is to help to create a viable public. I mean, the interesting thing is, and that's why, I mean, we have only short time here, but we have three subjects who also have equal value. I mean, one is this modernity subject, the second is bare life, I mean, life in its nakedness, and the third is education. And they are also related, of course, I mean, those three subjects. But to, I mean, to sum it up, the aim is to help to establish a kind of planetary public sphere, I mean, of people who are willing and capable to influence the political decision-making that affects them. That's it, basically.
There's a question here in the front.
It's actually very similar to the last one, I have to say. I was interested in the reference to the 55 Documenta. And you'll talk about the attempt to create a public sphere, essentially, from a traumatized situation where the public sphere was instrumentalized, essentially, during the Nazi time. And what I'm interested, and well, I get a sense from you that you're talking about a kind of continuity between that condition of the public sphere in 55 and the current condition of the public sphere. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how, if you could compare those two situations. It's a big question, Roger, sorry. But kind of jump over what we always talk about, which is the history of the post-war period, in a sense, and discuss how that public sphere, how you see that public sphere now, and the possibility of the exhibition to intervene in it, or is it to intervene in it, or indeed to create it, which is of course a familiar topic.
Yeah, that's a big one, that's true. I mean, in a way, on an abstract level, I mean, those, I mean, you can identify with a project to help to establish a public, but the condition is completely different. I mean, that's true. And today, I mean, I would say that the problem is that public space was, I mean, it was treated by Bode and in the beginning of Documenta, I think till Seemann even, as a given. And so it only had to be taken up and filled somehow. And people responded, I mean, to the sheer possibility to relate to certain topics mediated through art, and also to relate to each other. Now, the situation is different because, I mean, one of the many reasons is the different shape capitalism has taken. And also the way public space is completely commercialized and liberated or freed of any possibilities to enter into a kind of critical encounter with it. And this is also quite astonishing that even that possibility to enter into a kind of critical encounter is somehow somehow subverted, I mean, in the exhibition itself, I mean, where any attempt to enter critically is denounced as being too theoretical, too discursive, I mean, stuff like that, as if a central debate could anything else ever than theoretical. And so now one has really to work in order to legitimate, I mean, something like a critical stance, and it's also difficult to call it like that any longer because you have to get to another level, and for me, this level is associated with education. I think that's basically what museums are supposed to do, and what also exhibitions are supposed to do, where education does not mean didacticism or acquiring of knowledge, but what Foucault named caring of the self, where you take up, I mean, what artists are doing or the way artists are informing themselves about the shape of the world, and taking it up and making it your own, I mean, by changing, I mean, your own ways to perceive things, and in the end, I mean, your particular configurations of subjectivity. I mean, this encounter is most important, and that's what I would associate now, I mean, with going public or with being public. I mean, to have the possibility to educate yourself and others in the medium of the exhibition. And for me, I mean, this is the golden path, I mean, between didacticism and commodity fetishism. I mean, the two big dangers of exhibitions.
How do you actually, on a very practical level, deal with the tradition of educational tours at Documenta, which have always been a strong element, I think?
Yeah.
How do you address that, especially in that respect? Because also on these tours, I mean, a kind of governmentality or a kind of governing, kind of directing the audience how to perceive things and kind of giving them kind of digestible bits of how to look at work. How do you deal with that?
The exhibition takes place in 2007, so
okay.
I have to excuse myself. No, I also, like in discussing things with artists, I mean, I wouldn't pretend to stay outside of governmentality. I mean, I'm happy with being aware of it. I mean, that's the first thing, and keeping people aware of it. But yeah, I think there are alternatives to guided tours. And I mean, we are dealing with some possibilities at the moment in terms of education. One of it will be a strong education program with school children who will also give tours. But I think it's too early to give you any concrete hints about how it will look like. I can simply say that I'm aware of the problem.
Any more questions from the audience?
And another element maybe is also this magazine. I mean, it will come out before Documenta, showing, I mean, this discussion process, I mean, between the various magazines. So this could also be treated like an educational tool. And this network will have disappeared when the exhibition starts. So people who are interested in those subjects might have a try with those magazines.
Questions? Is there a question in the back? No. Yeah.
Thank you. Could if we had any suggestions to further such a project, is there an email we can contact you on to have suggestions perhaps or ideas?
How to contact me?
To forward, yeah, to you?
Yeah, I'm the most easiest to reach person on the planet, I think. But you can come to me after this talk, and then I'll be happy to help you out.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
That was very, very interesting. And thank you very much for being here and asking interesting questions. Thank you.